Tim Williams. Tim has been Senior Evaluation Advisor at John Snow since 1998, working on many public health projects worldwide, particularly in the area of reproductive health. He's devoted his career to improving health programs in developing countries, always aiming to build host country ownership of programs and research and evaluation findings. Before joining John Snow, Mr. Williams held research and evaluation positions at the International Planned Parenthood Federation, the Western Hemisphere region, AVSC, which is now called Engender Health, and Pro Familia, the IPPF affiliate in Colombia. So please, he has a master's degrees from Yale in international and development economics and environmental management. So very broad interests. Please join me in welcoming Tim.
And here I am talking about nutrition. So good afternoon, everybody. And I think this will follow very well with the previous presentations, especially the last one, moving just a little bit east from India to Bangladesh. I have no relationships to disclose. I'd like to acknowledge the many co-authors who helped on this presentation, and in particular, Elizabeth Williams, who is not here right now, but is here. Okay, good. She's our manager, our project director in Bangladesh, and she can help answer questions at the end, hopefully. In this presentation, I'll talk briefly about the nutrition situation in Bangladesh, a little bit about how Spring Project intends to work to improve nutrition in Bangladesh, and our strategic information, or basically monitoring and evaluation approach, and some initial monitoring and baseline findings. So, overview of SPRING, which stands for Sustaining Partnerships, Results, and Innovations in Nutrition Globally. It's a relatively new USAID-funded project, began about a year ago. It's a five-year cooperative agreement to strengthen global and country efforts to scale up high-impact nutrition interventions. We focus on preventing stunting, which was mentioned in the last presentation I'll talk a little bit about, and maternal child anemia in the first 1,000 days, and that means from pregnancy through 2 years. That's the period that we focus on because a lot of nutrition aspects that happen then can have a lasting effect throughout the life of the child. It's managed by JSI Research and Training Institute with partners Helen Keller, If Pre-Men Often Save the Children, and focus on countries with high burden of undernutrition, one of which is Bangladesh. And in Bangladesh, there are many serious nutrition issues. Almost half of children under age 5, 41%, are stunted. As was mentioned in the last presentation, that's low height for age. And that's a measure of chronic undernutrition. It's a cumulative effect of many nutritional aspects. And if a child is stunted during the first 2 years, it can have irreversible effects on cognitive and physical development. So that's why SPRING focuses so much on that particular aspect, and it's relatively high prevalence in Bangladesh. 16% are wasted, which is low weight for height, and that's more of a measure of acute malnutrition, like food shortages that a child can catch up from afterwards. About 20% infants born with low birth weight, and almost half of children and mothers are anemic. And these figures do correlate with wealth, but they're found across all wealth strata and in both urban and rural areas. Now, what are the issues affecting undernutrition in Bangladesh? Similar to a lot of other countries, they're listed here. Poor infant and young child feeding practices, especially breastfeeding, early initiation of breastfeeding, exclusive breastfeeding for the first 6 months. Breast milk has all the nutrients needed for the first 6 months of life, and then continued breastfeeding period, 6 months to 2 years. Minimal acceptable diet for children, 6 months to 2 years, which is a composite indicator of feeding frequency, continued breastfeeding, and diet diversity. So those are low and causes of undernutrition in Bangladesh. For all ages, lack of dietary diversity. Bangladesh is a very heavily rice-based diet, about 70% of caloric intake from rice, which is low-nutrient food. And then things like high food insecurity and hunger due to things like high food price and poverty, access to agricultural land, and vulnerability to natural disasters. As you all know, Bangladesh, low country and delta region subject to flooding. Also poor water and sanitation leading to high disease burden, and as was mentioned in the last presentation, low status of women, which does affect household allocation of food and what kinds of foods women and babies and young children receive. Bangladesh has made quite a bit of progress in some of these nutrition outcome indicators in the last several years, as shown by the last three DHS surveys showing stunting, wasting, and underweight. And stunting and underweight remain high but have improved over the last 7 years. Wasting has not really changed much but is quite a bit lower. And so progress is being made, but prevalence is still high. And because Bangladesh is a high population country, the absolute numbers of undernourished children are very high. And just this graph just shows that Bangladesh stunting on the far right is similar to other South Asia countries, between 40% and 50%, and really is similar to a lot of the large sub-Saharan African countries. Now, we have the tools to improve undernutrition in challenging contexts. The 2008 Lancet series that many of you are aware of identified 7 essential nutrition actions and showed how they impact child mortality. And then building on that, Scaling Up Nutrition Network, or SUN, has identified 13 high-impact nutrition and hygiene practices like exclusive breastfeeding, appropriate complementary feeding, micronutrient supplementation, good hygiene practices that when taken as a whole can have a very high impact on improving nutrition. And in this presentation, those are called Essential Nutrition Hygiene Actions. In this presentation, I refer to them as ENHA. So we know these things. The big challenges are what kinds of programs to put in to promote good messages, to affect good behavior change, and to scale those up. And Bangladesh has shown quite a bit of success in good programming and some of the behavioral changes that affect these nutrition outcomes. Also, this is a graph of exclusive breastfeeding prevalence over time in Bangladesh, and for many, many years it was stagnant around 40%, and then in the mid-2000s there was a lot of donor activity in this area and has had a lot of improvement recently. Most recent DHS shows it over 60%, although DHS says that at least 4 points of that is due to the sample, which had a larger percentage than usual of under 2 months. So, but in any case, the direction of exclusive breastfeeding is going up. Minimal acceptable diet is lower, but also seems to be improving. Minimal acceptable diet is a composite indicator of continued breastfeeding, feeding frequency, and diet diversity. So, what is Spring's approach in Bangladesh? The innovative aspect, perhaps, is integration. We're hoping to integrate and scale up essential nutrition and hygiene action messages within Ministry of Health and Family Welfare, Ministry of Agriculture, and others. So, multi-sectoral approach. On the agricultural side, work with households and communities to increase homestead food production and consumption of more diverse and more nutritious foods through these things called farmer field schools, which is households in a small area getting together and periodically learning good agricultural practices about how to grow nutritious food, and also at the same time receiving ENHA messages. And then working with frontline health, agriculture workers, peer facilitators, community workers, and others to deliver quality counseling on ENHA to affect behavior change among our target, which is pregnant and lactating women and children under 2. And this 5-year project, we're just beginning year 2, but the activities in Bangladesh really just got underway in the last 3 months or so. So what I'm going to show as results is really about a 3-month period. To summarize, what we want to do is integrate ENHA through health, agriculture, and other sectors at national, divisional, and community levels through action-oriented messages, multiple platforms, using multiple channels and multiple contacts, the idea being that a woman hears the same good nutrition messages through agriculture workers, community clinics, farmer field schools. The more she hears simple, doable messages, the more likely it is to affect behavior change. Health system, agriculture, this is an example of what a farmer field school might look like with raised beds and nice spacing. Spring is providing seeds for these farmer field schools and helping with agricultural practices. And poultry, we're not providing poultry for a number of reasons, but we're helping construct poultry sheds and give advice on how to raise poultry and working with partners who are working with fish production, also another animal food product that is important. Where are we working? We're working in two regions or divisions in Bangladesh called Barishal and Khulna, which are in the southwest, as you see in this map. They have high burden of undernutrition, intense donor activity in recent years. They are environmentally sensitive delta region areas. And Spring has worked in 15 upazilas, which are sub-districts, Bangladesh name for sub-districts, in year one, and will add 25 additional upazilas in year two, hoping to reach 80 upazilas across Khulna and Barishal by the end of the project, which will cover most of those divisions. And again, our target population is pregnant, lactating women, and children under two. And again, Delta region with challenging transport and infrastructure issues. Now, how are we going to know how we're doing? We have a strategic information or monitoring evaluation approach set up. We were asked by USAID not to do a special baseline survey of the project because there are so many surveys that are already ongoing there, including DHS, which just finished, PRSSP, which is U.S. government initiative, Feed the Future baseline, and the Food Security Nutrition Surveillance Program, FSNSP, does three rounds of surveys every year in Khulna and Barishal. So we're using the secondary analysis of those for a proxy baseline. And in particular, expanding the sample in round 7 and 8 of the FSNSP survey last July and September to get a larger sample of spring upazilas. That survey, feel it's very important to also develop monitoring systems to track routinely information and know how we're doing along the way. So we have a very nice system set up to do that. We also will do some qualitative research like focus groups to find out how things are working, whether they're working well or not, and how to make adjustments along the way. Overall, build a culture of information to assess, document, report, and use information. We have a framework that I don't have time to go into, but basically a logic model showing how inputs are converted through processes to outputs, outcomes, and hopefully good nutrition impact. Our goal in strategic information is to focus on the black box of what are the key ingredients or intermediate results to get from inputs to outcomes and impact. In a very quick summation, the simple things that we'll do in our strategic information approach are to look at numbers of people trained and supervised, how many facilities and services are supported, and what that means in terms of translating to people reached with ENHA messages. But not only numbers of people reached, what's the quality of those messages? And putting all that together through the FSNSP surveys, does that relate to behavior change? And if it does, we have confidence because of the nutrition research done to date that that will lead to nutrition outcomes. So, select baseline and early monitoring findings. We, in monitoring, came up with 4 tools to look at approximately 15 process and outcome indicators, things like number of people trained and characteristics of farmer field school participants, the other things on this list, and quality of ENHA messages through a supportive supervision checklist. Every month, data will be collected and sent to division M&E specialists. Okay. And fed back on a monthly basis. I'll skip these slides, which are showing basically our targets and achievements in training. I do want to show that we have we're tracking over time against targets and mapping all of these indicators. And we see that in this is a map of Barishal, and the green is the Upazilas that Spring is working in. And we can see by the blue and red dots where master trainers have been trained. And then compare that where health workers have been trained. And you can see that we're just starting that process now. Then perhaps more importantly, this is looking at farmer field school establishment in Upazilas across Kulna Division. And you can see the dots show where farmer field schools are, and the high colors show more people being reached. So we're tracking this and showing the impact as far as people reached. We have survey information. This is just showing that breastfeeding in Barishal and Kulna is similar to national. I'll skip this and show that basic farming practices. Most households have homestead gardens. Very few raise plants and animals, so we're working on that by helping them with poultry development, and a number do consume animal foods, mostly small fish that they buy in the market. And then hand washing practices, basically very good after cleaning child, but before preparing food, because the hand washing is far away from the kitchen, is very low, and we're working on that by putting hand washing systems closer to food. So to summarize, the activities are underway and most are on schedule. Our survey indicators show the areas that are weakest that we need to work on, and that will guide us the way we carry out our activities. And we're looking forward to the challenge of integrating and scaling up nutrition, good messages in Bangladesh, hoping to have a positive impact on the young population. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Well, we now have, with thanks to each of our panelists for staying with the appropriate time, we have almost 30 minutes for questions. So the floor is open. If you have a question, people will be able to hear you better if you stand up, and it'll be helpful if you identify yourself. In the front.
Hi, Tim. I was wondering if you're working with Benjamin Schieber. I was asking him if he works with an activist in India called, her name is Vandana Shiva, and I was wondering if he was working with
India.
Okay.
Is it for Bangladesh? We don't work in India.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Maybe be.
She is from, she runs her own seed bank in India. It's called Navdanya.
Yes.
She has not made any inroads in the Bangladesh scenario.
Thank
but
you. Yeah.
In the very back.
This is a question related to the seed question and the Oxfam presentation, but to the gentleman who presented on spring, are you sourcing seeds from Israel?
Again, I think my colleague can answer some of these questions better because she's based in Bangladesh.
So we are not sourcing seeds regionally. It's the USAID funded project, but USAID does have a caveat where you can get exceptions for some of the production, I guess the farmers. So what you need, we need to apply for a waiver, and we did apply for a waiver, and we're all the way through the USAID mission in country of Bangladesh, and we came back to Washington, and we went back to the regional office. Eventually, you have about the process takes. It took much shorter than it normally takes. It took about 6 weeks for us to get a clearance through to be able to purchase the seed. But normally, it takes between 2 to 3 months.
Where do the seeds come from?
We buy them locally. We bought them locally. So what we had to do was to
locally from U.S. producers.
No, we bought them locally from Bangladesh producers. So we got them locally from Bangladesh producers, and they were identified to be. We had to say if they were genetically modified or non genetically modified. We had to say the source of the seeds and where they were produced, and give a short justification on why we are buying them locally. Well, we had to do a tender for that, identify the producers that we're going to buy from, then send that in with the application for a waiver, and we got the waiver.
Elvira?
Hi. My name is Dr. Elvira. I'm here, and my question is for Tim. Hi, Tim. How
concerns about really measuring outcomes, because you mentioned that you have five topics in the year. So when is USAID going to really measure outcomes that really are the number of children that are participating in these interventions really improving their nutritional status or not?
Okay, thank you. Yeah, it's actually a challenge because it's around the time of the beginning of the project we really said if we don't do our own baseline survey, there are going to be lots of challenges in doing that. And so now we're sort of left with three different surveys that cover the spring Upasilas, and to a certain extent we can do secondary analysis and separate out those from what we call control. But what USAID wants to do is really look at the entire package in Barishal and Khulna and not really say that spring achieved this and some other project achieved that and another project achieved that. They want to look at the entire package and see how the nutrition outcomes came. Now that said, the one way that we're going to get a pretty good look at this, and Elizabeth can add maybe something, is that the FSNSP surveillance that does three rounds of surveys every year works, are samples in spring Upasilas and non-spring Upasilas. And we, at the beginning, did an oversample of spring Upasilas in July to September this last year. And that information is actually still being analyzed. But we're going to look at that and then hopefully, I think, do one midpoint similar oversample and one end of project oversample. And in that way, have a quasi-control mechanism of saying how spring did. But overall, USAID wants to look at the whole package. Do you want to add anything?
And one of the reasons for that is that USAID, Barishal and Khulna in the southwest are the featured hubs of spring USAID. So they have a number of different projects that are also focused on part-year nutrition, but a lot on agriculture. So the goal for USAID is just look at the overall impact in the future.
Yeah, they will be able to see really what the intervention that really contributed to
the most. Well, USAID would not be able to, but because of the way we did the sampling with the FSNSP, spring would be able to actually do it pretty well because we did it a little bit more.
Thank you.
Right. In the very back?
Yes, my question is for Sarah from Austin. My name is Sarah Olstep, and I'm a dietitian interested in undernutrition in developing countries, but I'm also currently an attorney with an organization called Community Food and Justice Coalition, and part of our work is really working towards the new farm bill and making it, you know, equitable and sustainable in the U.S. I have two questions. One is, does what you promote ever, or promoting the local purchase of food ever kind of conflict with the local farmers in the U.S., or is it just against, like, the, mega agricultural, businesses? And second is, are there coalitions that are working at that policy end to go against the large agricultural lobbying forces?
Yes, so first there is always tension between global priorities and local priorities, and building the economy here in the United States at a time of great difficulty for a lot of people, and contributing to a more stable and economically robust global world, which helps our national security. That said, the way that the Farm Bill is set up, the subsidies and the benefits that we're talking about go to a very small number of people.
90%
go to large businesses that you talk about. Yeah, so they want to make this about U.S. jobs. It is not actually about that. Again, the market for corn right now is just crazy. There's plenty of ways to sell corn in the United States and plenty of markets, and it doesn't need to be built on the backs of people who are hungry around the world. There are lots of coalitions working on the Farm Bill. They're doing great, great, great stuff. National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition has a big group working on this. We have a food aid reform working group, which is us and, oh my gosh, I can't remember, Partners in Health and American Jewish World Service and a couple of other groups. I think Red Food World as well. So there's definitely a lot of groups looking at the Farm Bill. Again, the Farm Bill is constructed to put local nutrition needs up against the need. Like, there's parts of the Farm Bill for everybody, and it makes it hard for people to work together, because you might have something that's really good for food aid, which there's great food aid stuff in the Senate bill, but there's not, maybe not such good conservation stuff or not such good local nutrition. So it's been very hard, I think, to build a bigger collaboration, but I hope we can do that. I don't know if that answers your question.
So we should ask our congressman to support the Farm Bill?
I mean, we're looking at the Senate version is so radically much better than the House version. It's not even funny. That said, it's still not great. It's still not great. It has never been great, and it has always been a challenge. People put a tremendous amount of effort, advocates across the country, in making it as good bad as it